this is Haley Connor with Pino's Palette. You're listening to Social Geek Radio.
Welcome to Social Geek Radio, brought to you by Minolto Social Media Management. Here are your hosts, Deb Evans and Jack Munson.
Thanks for joining us on Social Geek Radio. This is Deb Evans.
And Jack Munson from Minolto Inc. on Social Geek Radio tonight. How you doing, Deb?
Doing very well. We have had such an exciting couple of weeks. Just coming off of the IFA convention, it couldn't have been better.
Right.
Really. And doing, I don't know what more to say. It couldn't have been better.
Doing the podcast live from IFA 2016 last week was awesome. And meeting tonight's guest at IFA 2016 was even more awesome. I've got to geek it out for you tonight, Deb, though, before
Share
we get
your
started.
Geek it out.
Okay.
Yes,
Deb always does the cool things to help your business and to organize your day and to keep your office rolling. My new geek it out is my favorite new game.
Ooh.
It's available right now in the App Store on iOS, and it's free, which all games should be free, in my opinion. This is a very cool game, though. It's a variation on Solitaire, and it's called Churchill. It just rolled out about 2 weeks ago, and I'm already obsessed with it, and it's turning into sort of an addiction across the country. What it is, it's a special version of Solitaire that Winston Churchill developed sometime, I believe it was in the early 1900s, maybe through World War I. And the story goes, and you're going to be shocked at when I tell you who the app developer is on this. The story goes, Winston Churchill developed this new version of Solitaire that is ridiculously hard, and it's got a whole different set of cards and rules and everything, but it's very cool. And sometime after World War II, he shared how this game that he created goes with someone who I believe was the ambassador to England from the U.S. About 30 years later, that guy shared this Churchill Solitaire game with Donald Rumsfeld, the future Secretary of Defense, right?
Yeah.
Right. So fast forward to 2016, the guy who actually owns this game is none other than Donald Rumsfeld. And he put together a whole team of people to develop this thing, but it's so cool. Go to the iPhone App Store and get it. I'm sure it's available on, for your iPad as well. It's just called Churchill. Download it for free. There's a whole bunch of cool World War I and World War II historical facts in there as well. So you learn a little while you're playing. But anyway, Churchill.
I'm impressed.
Yeah.
Now, see, I'm not a game person. I'm not a game person. I don't download these. This one, I think I will because I am. That is very cool. Look at you, Jack. You got geek. You got history. I'm just.
It's where American and British history runs into geekiness, and that's exactly where I'm at on the Venn diagram. So anyway,
well,
check that out. And before we get any further, let's talk about one of my new favorite geeks that we met at IFA 2016 this year. And Tim, I don't think he'll care if we call him a geek, right?
I don't think so. Because, you know, Tim Tang, we are officially on Social Geek Radio giving you the award of most tweeted or biggest tweet or whatever you want to call it. Because that's how we met in person. But then it's like, so Jack, I meet Tim in person. I'm going, oh my God, I know this guy. How do I know this guy? He's brand new to IFA. He's never been to a convention. Not, you know, new to franchising. And then I go to my Twitter feed and go, there he is.
He's
all over it. Hashtag IFA 2016. So you get the award, sir.
I'm very
well done.
So, Tim, welcome to Social Geek Radio. Tim Tang, Director of Enterprise Solutions with the Hughes Corporation. Tim, you've got a huge background in technology and now on the customer side. Tell us a little bit about what you do and what your role is there.
It's great to be here. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Sure.
I've got a really neat job. I get to look at the intersection of people and machines to a large extent. It's how I think, and it's how I look at the world to a large extent. Technology creates all these interesting opportunities experiences potentially, and well, people are people. And my role at Hughes is to look at how our solution sets can be used to kind of help enhance and create the experience that our customers are looking for as they engage with their consumers. I've been at Hughes for over 20 years now. When I first started, it was a very simple job. I was designing data networks for corporate customers, and it was just simply about how do I support their credit card transactions and their back office applications. As technology has kind of dug deeper and deeper into our lives, my role has kind of naturally expanded. It's no longer just about the connectivity to the stores or to the restaurants. It's about the consumer's experience. That's what drives everything. It's not enough just to have an exciting solution like a digital signage or a guest Wi-Fi. It's trying to create an experience that actually means something to the consumer.
Mm. I love it.
And you've worked with a lot of different verticals and throughout the years, and recently you've taken a look at franchising. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, it's interesting when you look at the world from a vertical perspective, because you can see how technology has moved through different eras. You know, if you rewind maybe 5-7 years, you saw in the retail sector there was just an immense pressure because of Amazon primarily to renovate, to create a new generation of customer engagement, because the online competitors were just so compelling and so effective that the brick and mortar stores were almost devastated to a large extent in their efforts to compete. And so there was a huge wave of technology coming into the brick and mortar stores to try to enhance and augment that experience. Then, you know, a few years later, for the most part, the restaurants didn't pay very much attention to that. They didn't need to. You weren't going to order your meal online to some extent. So there wasn't as great as a competitive threat there. But more recently now, with the advent of mobile and the new norm becoming mobile ordering, we see the restaurant industry now starting to really embrace all the new kind of innovations in terms of creating, again, using technology to create that next generation customer experience. And then in addition, I'm also looking at banking and finance. And that's another industry where, you know, it used to be a whole world of the business was just simply about bringing your checks to a bank to cash them. And, you know, nobody does that anymore. And so it's a whole industry that's looking to kind of reinvent itself. And so the neat thing is that as we move from the retail era to the restaurant era to the banking and finance, I get to see a lot of the same kind of trends reemerge over and over again, just in different industries.
And what are some of the bigger trends you're seeing right now? Who's really jumping on what part of your business?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think that's where I spend the bulk of my time. The crux of the question is really what makes a difference, because there's so many different technologies to choose from, and there's so many options that are available to you that for any kind of enterprise customer, it's difficult because they're also expensive solutions or expensive investments in many cases too as well. And there's an urgent need to have an appropriate strategy that allows you to not only take advantage of the technology, but to be able to get rid of it when it doesn't work to a large extent. Mm-hmm. And so a big part of the challenge is then trying to understand, well, what is real and what is not real. You look at digital signage 10 years ago, it was very exciting. Lots of people were trying it, but very few were actually rolling it out. Very few were actually deploying it on a wide-scale basis to all their locations. You might see a few pop-ups of here and there. More recently now, it's become far more mainstream. But back then, it was a novelty item. It was kind of a new. And a lot of enterprise customers were all excited about trying it out. But what I saw was what they were actually buying, what they were actually signing contracts for, it wasn't the customer-facing stuff. It was actually the employee-facing stuff.
Hmm.
The employee-facing stuff was a far more meaningful value proposition to them in terms of regulatory issues. It became a training issue. Needed to make sure I understand which employee watched which training elements, but it also became an effective way to grow the business. The better train employee waste fewer resources, is far more effective, and provides a higher customer service. And so it was these benefits that the enterprises were actually spending their money on. So everybody was playing with digital signage, the customer-facing stuff, but what they were actually buying was the employee-facing stuff to grow their businesses.
Very interesting. And we talked a bit about franchising, and we talked about how we met at the IFA conference. Tell us your thoughts on how the conference compares to all of these other industries and high-tech types of worlds that you typically live in.
That's, so I've been working for Hughes for over 20 years. I've been doing this role for the last 10 or so. So I have the opportunity to attend many, many different conferences. And I will say that my experience at the IFA was unique. It was surprising. I had never been to a place with so many people on such large scale, where people were just so nice. They were so friendly. This was my first experience, and I had really no context for how to navigate the whole situation, and yet so many people from so many different industries, and from so high up. I guess that was the most remarkable thing, that even at the higher level executives, your presidents and your CEOs and your founders, were just so accessible, so nice, and so willing to help. It was a tremendous experience. It was like going to a family reunion of sorts. And everywhere you turned around, there was a friendly face and somebody to talk to, somebody to kind of help you out and figure things out.
Yeah, I think the difference here, as opposed to so many other industries and conferences, is that it's not really an industry, right? I mean, there's everybody sort of competes with everybody on some level because you're trying to grow your business. But you have people from food industries and service industries and all of these different types of things that you take a step back and say, well, these people aren't really competing with each other. They just share a business model.
Right. Yeah. That's a segment. Very good. And I'm so glad that your experience was that that positive, because I know, and Jack as well, we go year after year after year. And I think I may be coming up to my 10th or I don't know. It's like I've lost count. But every year I feel the same thing. I feel that family warmth, rewarding, reunion. And it could be new, like people like you. Like, I felt like I've known you forever, and we only met, saw each other maybe twice there, but got to know each other digitally through Twitter. And it's just like, you know, we've built a lasting relationship. So kudos to everybody in the franchise world that makes this the experience it is.
It was a lot of fun. I was there for the full thing. So I even took some of the CFE classes early on.
Okay, and, for you.
It was very effective. I felt like in the course of a couple of days that I've got many years worth of insight and understanding of how this industry works. And I highly recommend those kind of classes.
Yeah, and so we talked about how everybody's sharing this sort of business model. They're also sharing a huge challenge right now, and I know it's something that you've been looking into and speaking quite a bit about, and that's with the situation with the National Labor Relations Board. Seems like you've got some ideas on how technology and some other things that you're working on might actually be able to help people in the franchise business model when it comes to the NLRB. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, when I look at the essential problem of the NLRB, it's around this premise that the brands, the franchisors, have far too much influence over the way business is operated in the franchisees. And because they have so much influence and so much intimacy, then they ought to be held responsible and even liable for the activities of their employees, of the franchisees. And so when I look at that and as I see the fundamental issue of the problem there, then the solution is going to be, well, the franchisor is going to have to insert more distance between how they operate with the franchisees. And it's so much so that they can no longer be reasonably held responsible for whatever business activities might be taking place in the franchisee's business. Now, the dilemma and the challenge with that is the franchisor still needs to maintain their brand standard. They still need to create that consistent customer experience for the end user, for the consumer, when they visit one location to the next. And it creates this meaningful challenge of how do you do that? How do you create a consistent brand standard when you have to increase more distance, not less, between yourself and your business partner, the franchisee? I think it's going to require a new model, a new approach. If you look at the way a lot of the franchisees operate, and there was many, many discussions about this, it's essentially kind of the same approach to the business. You have a corporate brand standard, and then you have agents that basically then work with the franchisees, business consultants, regional developers, whatever the title may be. And that's very done on a one-to-one. And then you have an operations manual which lays out in great gory detail, this is how you're supposed to do these things. Well, now we need a world where we can step back and increase the distance between the franchisor and franchisee, which means that we need to, instead of laying down the law for the franchisees, we need them to create a context where they actually want to do what they're supposed to do. So a lot of the sessions and a lot of the discussions centered around, you know, best practices or approaches being you can set the standards as a brand, as a franchisor. You just can't tell them everything that they're supposed to do. You can provide the resources, but you can't mandate the activity. And as I look at technology, I think there's a meaningful opportunity to kind of contribute to this problem, particularly as we relate to the next generation. That was another really exciting piece in looking at the millennials and the upcoming generation as they are looking at the franchise industry to it and are entering into this space. It's astounding how much of an employer franchising as an industry is to the upcoming generation. And this new wave of employees is very much mobile enabled. They've got the device glued to their hands to a large extent, and we can use that device to create a new channel of communication, a new channel of training for these new employees. So as I started thinking this through, you know, the franchisor needs to get further away, further away from the franchisees so that they're no longer held responsible and liable. But they also need to increase the effectiveness of their communications to not only the franchisees, but to also their employees. And I think tools like mobile applications, video-based training are going to be the natural segment to kind of achieve that model, where you have franchisors creating exciting training content that they don't mandate, they don't force their franchisees or their employees to take, but their employees want to take because it's just like watching the YouTube videos that they so much enjoy at home to a large extent. So we can use technology, we can use some of the trends of how our society moves, thinks, entertains itself, and see that as a creating another channel, not the documentations, not necessarily completely dependent on the one-on-one business consultant coming in and telling the franchisee how to do their business. But we can augment that, leverage technology, create another channel where the franchisor can make content available and the franchisee and their employees want to take the content. That's really what it's going to come down to. It can't be forced, it can't be mandated, but it's got to be so intriguing and so effective that the franchisee and their employees want to follow these standards. They want to follow these rules and they want to follow these practices because it'll be good for their business. And I think some of the big benefits is that, you know, with some of the newer technologies, training will become more accessible, it'll be more frequent, it'll be shorter too as well. It takes hours to read a manual. It takes in 5 minutes with a short little video clip, the same essential content could be more effectively transferred. Monkey see, monkey do. It'll be that kind of effectiveness in training. So I think when we look at the implications of the NLRB, the franchisor is going to have to back away from their franchisees, but then they can turn to technology to create another channel of communication that's volunteer-based, that they're not mandating, but people want to be part of because it's so entertaining, it's so effective, and it makes such a meaningful difference to their business.
I think that's a very creative solution to the whole problem, Tim.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, because you're looking not just at, how do we get around what the government says, right? And I think we spend too much time looking at the problem from that angle, but you're looking at it from the actual audience. Who are we speaking to? It's the next generation of franchisees, and you're talking their language. You're talking about getting them to be involved in the community. And not just doing something because it's mandated, but because it's a great resource that's going to help them. And I think that's what people look to any community to do.
Yes. I mean, if you look at our world, we are in a face.